Mr. Ambassador, we are 1 year into this. Do you have any personal regrets and feelings about what has happened over the last year?
Well, that was, of course, a difficult year. But I also understand that we are moving in the right direction. And it has been sent yesterday by President Putin in his address. So the situation is in Ukraine. Ukraine itself is in an extremely difficult position right now. It is becoming fable and fable. And this is mostly due to the Western assistance. It is only half of population is living right now in Ukraine. Its gross domestic products is 35% down. It lost its industry, agriculture. It is losing its human resources because it's already the seventh wave of inscription calling up. And it is less and less trained people are now fighting in the Eastern Front. As for our side, it is we are steadily gaining terrain and moving and acquiring more and more terrain, and we continue to do that.
But you have lost a huge number of soldiers and expended a massive amount of your military might, and you've hardly been able to move much into Ukraine. You can't suggest to me that this is what you had hoped for a year ago.
I do not go into the speculation of how many soldiers have been lost, but most of the experts agree that we are losing one soldier to seven or eight Ukrainians.
Can I ask, looking at the overall military balance, whether you actually believe, whether Russia really believes you can win this war?
That depends what you mean by winning, and there are different definitions. Our view and what we are trying to do over the year is, first of all, to help Russians and the Russian-speaking people in Donbass. They shouldn't be killed, shelled every day as it is happening right now, and they should get back the right to speak their own language, and they should be secure. This is one thing. And the other thing which is necessary is that there should be no threat from Ukrainian soil at all for Russia.
We're talking about how well this is going or not. Mr. Prigozhin, who runs the Wagner Group, yesterday on his Telegram channel, accused the head of the military of high treason.
Andrew, I'm not responsible for Mr. Prigozhin or these private companies, so I have no official answer, so we can abandon this subject.
But he's clearly, he clearly doesn't think he's winning because he's accusing the high command of high treason. He's saying, we're not getting the ammunition we need. We're in real trouble.
I don't believe that it is. Probably it's a fake, really, because they have sufficient ammunition, because I read every day that they are advancing. Right now, they have nearly encircled Artyomovsk, which is also called Bakhmut, which will be a great trouble for Ukrainian forces, because they have, in this encirclement, around 50,000 of people.
You mentioned just now President Putin's address yesterday. In that address, he said that honor, trust, and decency were not things that the West recognized. What is honorable, what is decent about destroying the infrastructure, the electricity of a country which is now 30 degrees below in the middle of winter and where people are really in deep, deep distress? Mm-hmm. What's honorable about that?
It is we are destroying command controls and communication system of the armed forces.
But also the electricity system.
Not the command control and communication system of armed forces, just to prevent movement on it. As for decency, he was speaking about different things. He was speaking about the acknowledgement that we have heard recently that 8 years of negotiations about Minsk agreements. Minsk agreements is, in fact, it's a peace plan. It's a real peace plan. It was all imitation of diplomacy, like Boris Johnson has said. It has been done for reinforcing. They have need 8 years to reinforce Ukrainian forces, as Merkel has said, and François Hollande as well. So this is a kind of decency. It was deception was, in fact, deception. Reality is we really did believe that Minsk agreements could be implemented and it could bring peace to Donbass. It didn't happen.
I want to come to how peace could one day be achieved a little bit later. But before we do that, I just want to stay with the war. According to the United Nations itself, around 8,000 civilians have been killed, including 450 children. And I just wonder how you feel about that.
Badly, but I can tell you that also in accordance with United Nations calculation, after 2014 and this coup d'etat in Kyiv, 12,000 civilians has been killed, while Ukrainian forces standing just in front of Donbas were shelling every day Donetsk, Lugansk, and towns and villages over there.
Your president has described the regime in Kyiv as a neo-Nazi or a Nazi government. Can you explain to people listening how it's possible for a Nazi government to be run by a Jewish president?
No, that's a question, a very hypothetical question. We are speaking that it's ideologically wrong, absolutely, to oppress one of the nations. Just imagine, for instance, that Belgium will prohibit French language. What President Hollande, what President Macron is going to do? Safely just go for elections and just neglect what is going to happen. The Kyiv regime at the moment, he is prohibiting Russian language, Russian people. He is saying that all Russians get out of the country, prohibiting education, other things, discrimination and shelling. This is what is bad. This is why we are calling this such an approach. It's a Nazi approach.
But your government says again and again that you are not going to war against the Ukrainian people.
Exactly.
And yet 8,000 Ukrainians killed, 13,000 badly injured. And this is happening because of the blast effect of Russian shells and Russian missiles hitting buildings, hitting nurseries, hitting hospitals. This is not an ordinary military operation. This is a war of conquest.
No, Mr. Mark, this is not a war of conquest. It is a war of, it's not a war. First of all, this is a special operation in which we are trying to defend Russians and Russian-speaking, as I have said already. You are bringing me ciphers, but what to do with the ciphers that has about killing that has achieved before in Donbas? Because we every such terroristic attack, every criminal did, and I will say that last Sunday, shelling was continued of Donetsk Republic, and 12 people were killed, if I'm not mistaken, 12 or something. And they're shelling exactly buildings of the people, the electricity infrastructure, and all of that. Let us stop this, and we will think about this further.
We talked about the president's speech yesterday, and I suppose the big surprise in it, or the big announcement at the end of it, was that Russia was withdrawing from the so-called Fresh Start missile agreement with the United States. But we've seen something on the Foreign Ministry Telegram channel saying that this can be reversed. So can you clear up whether or not Russia is withdrawing from that treaty, and if so, why?
Withdrawing is a wrong word. The right term is suspension. Suspension means, first of all, the origin, why it has happened. What we are seeing right now is that United States, as a part of the treaty, is becoming more and more adversarial. Its policy line is a strategic defeat on Russia. Strategic defeat, you can imagine that. And also it has been joined by France and Britain. In this line, they also would like to put strategic defeat in Russia. By the way, UK is increasing its nuclear arsenal by 40%, as we understand, number of the warheads on the nukes in the submarines. All of that.
We have very few compared to you. Very few.
Come on. They are saying that China also has a similar number, but the U.S. is doing an effort to bring it into the negotiations. So all in all, it makes a fundamental change of circumstances, which lawyers are calling as a precondition to change the situation. Let me explain to you. What we are doing right now, we are suspending our participation in this treaty, which basically means that we are suspending verification procedures.
Mm. Yes.
Exchange of information.
Yes.
However, we are responsible participants, and the limits on the nuclear warhead will remain. We will stick to the limits that has been inscribed in the treaty. We also will continue the exchange about launches of missiles. So the main part of the body of the treaty will remain. And this is reversible
It is reversible. The suspension could be reversed.
Yes.
Under what circumstances could it be reversed?
We shall better conditions. We will need to see that U.S. is reversing its policy of creating anti-Russia out of Ukraine, that it is coming back into the normal strategic situation. One of the fundamentals, by the way, it is link between offensive and defensive weapon. It is absolutely important. It has been from the very beginning of the strategic process. But U.S. has gone out of ABM Treaty, which is, of course, one of the major preconditions of the stability here.
Is this the beginning of a wider world war between Russia and the West?
I hope, and I do not know, not at all, not this one step, but however, NATO countries are going deeper and deeper into the conflict, especially UK as a leading European country in this aspect by providing more fighter jets now, possibly.
Hmm? There's a cause to provide fighter jets as well as new battle tanks.
Not sure, but the long-range weapon is the most dangerous here. The longer range of this weapon will be, the further we will have to push this line in Ukraine, because we need to safeguard Crimea and the main part of Russia. So if UK is provided longer range weapons, so we will need then to push this line further into Ukraine just to secure ourselves.
So further longer range missiles from the West means a push of the front line further west into Ukraine.
Exactly.
And can I ask, are there any circumstances at all in which Russia would use nuclear weapons in this conflict?
In this conflict, no. We have a very clear doctrine, and it is describing a very precise case when a nuclear weapon can be used. It is if nuclear attack is launched against Russia for the first time, and if conventional attack will be so grave that we that existence of our state is in danger. Perhaps I'm citing the doctrine not correctly, but these are the sense of these two things. This conflict does not suit any of this situation.
You said a little earlier that you were pushing forward and doing very well on the front line. The Ukrainians say they're doing very well. It's very hard for those of us standing outside to know what's really going on. But it does seem that the front line is now sort of frozen. There's not a huge amount of movement in any direction. We're sitting here on the first anniversary of the war. Do you think we could be sitting here on the second and third one?
No, no. In the first place, the front line is moving, and moving in the east, and pretty quickly. We are gaining terrain slowly, but we are keeping our forces safe, and we are trying not to lose many people. That's important. That it a lot depends. You are talking about peace talks. We are ready for the peace talks anytime. We have a good attempt done in April, but then Ukraine unilaterally has withdrawn from it. It was very there was no reason for this, but we understand it was a kind of command that no peace talk, but continue but the battle.
They are saying that as long as you are occupying part of their territory, their land, there can't be peace talks. Could we just put that slightly to one side and ask what Russia's preconditions would be? What would have to be on the table for Russia to be engaged in serious peace talks?
I probably has already said that. First of all, it is normal treatment of Russian people. Normal treatment, just abandoning these ideas of prohibiting all Russians, including Russian culture and all of that, and extermination of Russian people from the Ukraine. This is number one. And second, of course, security for Russia, and that threat should never come from the Ukrainian territory. Pretty simple conditions, I will say that.
Would some kind of internationally overseen regime covering the Donbass with United Nations oversight be acceptable as a way of giving those guarantees?
We have already tried this in the OAC. I was ambassador to the OAC, and we have done many attempts that international regime will cover this. Unfortunately, it has become unilateral. It was working this OAC people. They were working on one-sided and only for the Western, for the benefit of Western countries.
So if that's not acceptable,
I do not say that it is not acceptable. It's a matter of further negotiations, but this is this situation. It is not yet over there, and we fully understand that at the moment, Kyiv totally rejects an option of peace talks.
Let me ask you about what the West says about Russia's wider aims here. because we've heard from Western intelligence services yesterday that they believe Russia wants to incorporate Belarus and in due course take Moldova as well, and is looking hard at the Baltic states. In other words, that this is the beginning of a much wider Russian expansion. Is that true?
Mr. Marr, I hear these hypothetic ideas taken from out of the blue for a year that Russia is trying to keep Central Asia, to take Moldova and all that stuff. It is, I will say, it is not about Ukraine. It is about a fight between democracy and autocracy. So it's an ideological fight. So the world must go. This is nothing in common, in common with reality. We have a conflict in Ukraine, and we have a problem with Ukrainian government, which is whose policy is anti-Russian, with the help of the other NATO countries, providing it with weapon and all of that stuff. So this is what is on the table. And I suggest just those who are talking about it, they just need to have a clear framework of what is happening. Otherwise, we really can go into the conflict.
Then go further into that. Because part of the reason for all of this that President Putin described more than a year ago was NATO expansion and lack of NATO credibility, this war has clearly done exactly the opposite of what he wanted. Finland and Sweden now want to join NATO. President Zelensky is going to the NATO summit, I think, next month. In other words, NATO is getting stronger and advancing as a result of what has happened. Is there no rethinking in Moscow, thinking this is actually not exactly what we did not intend to happen? We've made a mistake here.
We have gone through seven waves of enlargement of NATO, in spite of all promises that this is not going to happen. We were telling every year and every time that this is bad, that it is not increasing security, but it is decreasing security. And we have come to the point in December 2021, before the February, when we have said either you stop or we will have a problem. We will have to respond by military technical means. And we, NATO, instead of this, NATO has sent us a kind of a letter. Let's have a large-scale discussion on different topics. This discussion we held for 10 years and more, even more after that. So nothing has happened. They do not listen to our warnings. So it resulted in the conflict. As for Finland and Sweden, it's a right question. We always hoped that they will keep neutral position, but at the same time, two of these countries were close to NATO for long years. They were sitting in the same bodies of NATO, planning together with NATO, exercising together with NATO. So this is not a big change, although it is very unpleasant for us because we now have to deploy new forces in the north and northwest, which the forces that we have withdrawn after the CFE treaty has been concluded. So right now we just need to reinstall these positions, and we will clearly be doing this.
President Putin, as part of that, has put Russia effectively on a war footing in terms of its economy. You know, the economic shift to military production is very pronounced. Waves and waves of new conscription is going on. Is Russia looking to the long term for a long-term war, that we're assuming that this is going to go on for years to come, because that's what it looks like from the outside.
Mm. I do believe that you have read yesterday's statement by President Putin, and it is clearly that he has made a division, a dividing line between the military operation in Ukraine and the development of economy in the civilian way, routes, enterprises, factories, and so on. In that way, I will say that sanctions that has been imposed on Russia, they are helping us right now. Of course, we are going through the turbulent period when we have to reconstruct our logistics. But in the past, if you remember, during Soviet Union, we were producing aircrafts, cars, lorries, electronics, ourselves, trains, and all of that stuff. After 19 and market economy, we were only buying it, unfortunately. It does not help economy.
So you're going back to a more Soviet-style economy?
Not to the Soviet style, but on a new level, totally. But we have now to build our own production, our own industry. We will have to reinstall civilian industry. And this is very important for development, I will say.
And I think it's today that there's a high-level Chinese delegation in Moscow. How important is it for the future of Russia and Russia's military efforts, this Chinese alliance?
For military efforts, it is nothing, I will say, because we do not have an alliance with China, sort of
military alliance.
It is not with China. Politically, we are close. Politically, economically, we are close. Trade has increased enormously because all trade that we have with Europe is now turned. With UK especially, it is 99% of trade has been cut off by UK. So it is reoriented to China. China, India, other Eastern countries, logistics is difficult. But we do believe that China is our friend, and it is a nation that understands the situation much better than here in England, in the UK. And globally, they also do not feel that United States, together with other Anglo-Saxon countries, should dominate in the world. The world should be multipolar, and we see that Beijing, China, is seeing clearly this picture, and in this sense, they are supporting us.
Final question, Ambassador. As I say, it's a year on. We've seen inflation all around the world. We've seen an increase in world hunger as a result of this war, and clearly an increase in instability around the world. From your perspective, knowing Moscow as you do, how long do you think this will go on for?
We are at the start of a difficult 10 years, of course, because lots of things are changing right now in the market, in economy, in the correlation of forces, in the places of different states. But I think that we...
10 years of instability, potentially.
Not of instability, but 10 years of changes, serious changes in the world order, I will say.
Ambassador Kaelin, thank you very much for talking to LBC.
Thank you very much to you, Mr. Barr.
Thank you.